So nice to be here with you all this week. And a big happy Mother's Day to all the mothers, to all the mothers. And we'll speak more about that, but just a couple quick announcements. Let's see here. A big thank you for all those supporting the Sangha, supporting these broadcasts. A thank you to James, Shauna, Lisa, Ivy, Alia, Catherine, Butch, and thank you others who also supported this. And thank you in advance. I want to remind everyone about my Wednesday evening meditation group. Something that's really powerful is happening Wednesday nights, and we're having just a wonderful time together. So much grace. You know, very similar to what we do here, but we spend our time in silence, and then I offer a guided meditation. And, you know, some of the individuals have been reporting, you know, in the group that they've been receiving this grace, not only during the meditation, but throughout the week, throughout their work day. And this really does make such a difference on the path to have a connection with something greater. And that greater thing, you know, is what I call the Divine Mother. And so it's a time where we are inviting her fully into our life so that she can have her way with us and show us a greater life, you know, a greater expansion of consciousness and divinity. And of course, you know, I encourage you in this moment, you know, just to put everything down and to settle in and join me in just opening and receiving. You know, letting go of your day, letting go of your week. You know, letting go of, you know, thinking about going to work tomorrow or whatever it is you might be thinking about. And just showing up here fully. Fully. You know, what we want when we meet is we're not really here for the words or the philosophy. You know, we are coming together in communion and receiving, you know, that which is holy, that which is divine. You know, so much of our life, we are receiving the vibrations of the collective consciousness or unconsciousness. But, you know, let this moment be a moment where we stop fully and just open ourselves and give ourselves permission to be childlike, to be innocent. And just to invite this grace, this connection with that which is higher, to come fully into your consciousness, to come fully in. And of course, it's helpful, you know, if you let your awareness, you know, fall backwards out of your thinking mind. Just fall into the deep silence of the space of the third eye. You know, including the heart, you know, the solar plexus, and we're just breathing in and out and just feeling. Feeling what's here. Experiencing what's here. And so I encourage you just to take a couple more deep, full breaths deep into the belly, relaxing the pelvis, the legs, the feet, you know, to sit and know you are sitting, you know, to be here fully, to experience the radiance of your own being. And also, if you're sensitive, you may notice this descent of grace just coming into you. And I invite you just to smile a little bit in a childlike and innocent way, just knowing that the Divine Mother, she loves you. You know, when we go to church, we are taught to worship God. But no one ever tells us that. In her infinite compassion, her infinite love, she's worshiping us. You know, she loves us so much. Each and every one of you. Uniquely, specifically. You know, some days, sometime in, modern spirituality, people have lost their connection to God and they just connect with spaciousness or emptiness or freedom, which of course are the magnificent qualities of God. You know, that's God in the masculine form. Spaciousness, emptiness, philosophy, dogma. Mindfulness, these types of things. But one of the things that has been forgotten in modern day spirituality is to be receptive. You know, this is the feminine side of God. We are receiving that which is greater. Even as I say these words, you know, I can almost feel my heart skipping a beat. You know, as I open and receive, you know, I feel myself flooded with grace. And so join me in this receptivity. Join me in this love. And know that the Divine Mother, she worships you. You are her child. She wants to flood you with grace, with light, with love, with happiness and joy. She wants to heal you from the inside out, transform you, show you a greater way of being here on planet Earth. You know, because I have a 5-year-old in the house, I also have a daughter who's going to be 18 this week, but I'm going to lose her real quick. You know, she's going off to college, but, you know, this experience of being a parent, you just love your children so much, so intensely. And, you know, the same is true with the Divine Mother towards us. It breaks her heart to see us fall on our face and make mistakes, or, you know, be, what's the word I'll use here, egoically challenged. You know, it breaks our heart to see us be arrogant and be lost in our minds and to put up this wall between us and her. That's one of the most heartbreaking things you can do to your parents is to ignore them, to deny them. And for some reason in modern spirituality, you know, I think it's mostly because people have had trauma with certain men who've, and sometimes women, who represent God, you know, like priests or pastors, and, you know, who've been dogmatic and judgmental and righteous. You know, when I, sometimes I go to church and sometimes the priest, it just seems like he's like angry and grumpy and judgmental. And this is when masculine spirituality goes wrong. It's too philosophical. It's too focused on the rules. It's too focused on, you know, what it says in a certain book. But if we truly open to the Divine Mother, it's all about love. It's about receptivity and compassion and saying, you know, being childlike, being humble. It's the opposite of being judgmental. It's the opposite of putting walls up or thinking you know out of arrogance. And so let us, you know, commit to this path this day to make sure that our spirituality is a balanced spirituality. You know, I encourage you to know vast, spacious freedom as the space of your own mind. I encourage you to be mindful and know the teachings. But what I'm encouraging you at this moment is to make sure your heart is open, your crown chakra is open, you're humble. And you have an open door to grace, to God, to the Divine Mother. You know, let her come into your life. You know, and show you the sunlit path. Excuse me, the sunlit path. Now, Sri Aurobindo, he had this teaching partner named Mira. Alfonza. She was a French lady, and but he just ended up calling her the mother. You know, she was the mother of the ashram, and she represented the divine feminine, and he absolutely worshipped the divine mother. And so with Aurobindo, when you study his teachings, you'll see he uses this word, the mother, and sometimes he's referring to his teaching partner. And you know, other times he's referring to the Divine Mother. But the beautiful thing about Mira is she opened her heart so deeply, so fully. She gave herself so fully to the path that the Divine Mother was just working through her. And again, this is an aspect, you know, this is what it's like when we adopt a path of the Divine Feminine. We're giving ourselves to truth, to that which is holy. We're giving ourselves to this movement of love so fully that there's no walls between us and God, between us and grace. And we begin to have a miraculous life. A miraculous life. You know, my good friend who's listening here, she came to the retreat in California, and you know, she just kept telling me, she said, Craig, I just can't believe how much energy was there. You know, that's the Divine Mother. She's moving through us when we join together on retreat, when we come together. That's satsang. And it can be overwhelming. You know, she was, you know, saying that I felt like exhausted by the end of the day because there was so much grace, so much light, so much intensity. And it feels that way, you know, very often in the beginning. But as you continue to open, eventually you feel just absolutely energized. When the resistance in you has been burnt up and healed and transformed, you know, then this grace is just energizing. But in the beginning, it can feel like you're burning up, you know, when all kinds of resistance, you know, is being basically cooked, you know, cooked in her grace, in her love. It's being burnt out of us. And so, you know, I can remember this teaching, you know, that I heard when I was studying out at Tara Mandala. It's a Tibetan Buddhist center, about an hour from where I live. And I used to volunteer out there, and my wife, she lived out there for a while on the land. And we'd go on retreat there, and it's a really magical place. And, you know, normally in Buddhism, they don't really honor the divine feminine, you know, too much. But the beautiful thing about this particular center is it's run by Lama Saltram, and she was actually the first Westerner to become a Tibetan nun back in the 60s or early 70s. And she's made her whole life, you know, dedicated to the resurrection, you know, of the divine feminine in Tibetan Buddhism. And so I, you know, just fell in love with her teachings, you know, because, you know, I grew up in a path of the divine feminine with my teacher, David. We studied Aurobindo's path, and it was, you know, all about the divine mother. That's who we would pray to every day. And so when I was out at this, you know, Tibetan Buddhist temple, you know, all the people there, they used to say this silly thing. It actually used to drive me a little crazy. I thought it was silly, but, you know, after a while I sat with it and saw how powerful it was. But they used to say this, that, you know, remember, you know, all people, you must be kind to them. Because in a previous incarnation, they could have been your mother. And I always thought, oh, wow, that this person who I'm struggling with or who's given me a hard time, I should respond with kindness and compassion, because there may have been a time in history, you know, when they took good care of me, when they raised me and nurtured me. You know, I've said this often, that I think being a mother is the most difficult job on the planet. And most of us, we didn't get, you know, like the mother that we probably wanted to get. You know, some of us are blessed with having great mothers, but many of us have had mothers who maybe they didn't know how to be a mom. Because I've worked in counseling and I've worked with so many different people, I've met many people who, you know, who are children, say in the 50s and 60s, and there used to be this thing that, you know, white men in lab coats who called themselves doctors, they used to say, you know, when a child is born, you should just ignore the child. Ignore it. And, you know, so it doesn't feel too special or too important or get too attached, or so it can develop really good independence. You know, this was a teaching back in the 40s and 50s, and it's just a terrible teaching that these, you know, I bet those white male doctors came up with this idea. And so then later on, you know, maybe 50 years later, 60 years later, I worked with these individuals who, you know, told me they had just so much trauma with their parents because they weren't picked up. They weren't told that they were loved. And if you can imagine, you know, I've met, you know, some of the moms, like the grandmas, who are taught that, you know, that you're supposed to just let your child cry. You don't pick your child up. And the mothers just said, oh, it was just heartbreaking to be in the doctor's office and to listen to, you know, some grumpy old man tell them that they shouldn't pick up their kids. And then, you know, back in the 50s and early 60s, I mean, hell, for a long time, people just gave all of their own inner knowing, their own wisdom, their intuitive guidance, which are all feminine qualities. They just gave it over, you know, to the doctor and, you know, followed his, you know, parenting guidelines. And the moms just told me, you know, how it just broke their heart, you know, just to listen to the children cry. And so some of us, we grew up, you know, with some of that conditioning in our life where our mothers, they didn't know any better. They didn't know they could think for themselves. They didn't know. They intuitively knew the doctor was wrong, but instead because we live in a Western culture, they chose to listen to science. And so some of us had mothers that didn't know how to be moms. They probably intuitively knew, but instead listen to the current model at the time of parenting. You know, now the new model is you just love your child, you just flood them with love, which to me is in alignment with compassion. With compassion. You know, some of us, our parents were single mothers, some of them struggled with addiction, some of them were really suffering, and so we may have trauma around our mothers. And for some of us, when we have this type of trauma, it can be common to develop a lack of trust in the divine feminine, even a lack of trust in God. You know, we might even be angry at God. You know, but if I just open my heart now, you know, and listen to the voice of God, she's overwhelmingly, you know, just flooding me with this love, and it's a very specific message for each and every one of you. She loves you. She cares about you. Let her into your hearts. Let her in. Receive. Receive. And receive something greater. Receive something greater. Because it's here and it's always here. This grace is literally always here. And so you have a choice. You can live in a way where you, you know, close all your chakras and put up a wall between you and God, between you and life, between you and the environment. Or you can open and receive, open and receive. You know, the great Ramakrishna from the Indian saint, he lived in the last century. He was Vivekananda's teacher. He actually lived in the century before as well. But, you know, he used to say, all women are mothers. You know, all women are mothers. And just respecting their divinity. And respecting their hard work in the world. And it's, you know, I'm certain that women work much harder than us men. And so this Mother's Day, you know, let us just be reminded to thank our mothers, even if they didn't do a good job, and you know, they did the best that they could, you know, with their own struggles. But to be able to look out at life and to honor, you know, how much has been given to us, you know, what the Buddha called this precious human birth. All of us came into this world through mothers. And all of us have the opportunity to be eternally blessed by God. Now, some of us, it feels like that God is raining down, you know, challenge after challenge after challenge. And, you know, if that's you, I encourage you. You know, just to acknowledge that we are born into an evolutionary world, which is just inherently difficult, you know, like the Buddha said. But then ask for help. There have been so many times in life when I've been deeply, deeply struggling. And I'll just say, God, Lord, will you be here with me? Will you hold me? Will you love me? Will you give me the strength to go forward? And then right away I just feel this grace coming into me, holding me, and giving me oftentimes just enough strength to get through this incredible challenge, you know, that we call life. And so anyways, I have a bunch of questions here, but I'm just going to look at the comments. Brad writes, Craig, out of all the infinite ways to love, there is something special about a mother's love. Yeah, that's so true. There is something special. You know, I was out working on my van today, and me and my daughter, we were out there, and we just bought this really old van, you know, which my teenage daughter, when she sees it, will call it a kidnapper van, but we're gonna turn it into a camper van, you know, so me and Ashley and Ani can tour around, you know, Colorado and the deserts of Arizona, Utah, New Mexico, and you know, do some camping out and rock climbing and all kinds of fun stuff. And so we got this old work van, and you know, so it had some old stuff in it. We were taking it apart, and I was pulling a board, and I smacked my little girl in the head with the, you know, with the other end of the board. She was kind of standing behind me, and I was pulling on it, and just gave her a little whack to the head. And boy, was she screaming. And, you know, I picked her up, and she was like, I want mom. I want mom. And, you know, that's the beautiful thing about a mother's love. Even though my little darling, she loves me so much. But, you know, so many of us, you know, if we have a choice, you know, between being held by mom or dad, it's always mom, you know, almost always. And so, yeah, Brad, you're so right that, you know, there's something special about a mother's love. He also goes on to say, I come from an era when children were seen and not heard. I'm glad to see that things have changed. Your words are very comforting today. And yeah, that's, it's brutal that, that there was a time period, you know, where people would try to ignore their children. And now it's like, you know, the kid can't go outside without first being lathered in sunscreen and have a sun hat and, you know, like they're going to melt, you know, if the sun touches them. And of course, all the food has to be organic and no sugar and all this. But, you know, and some parents, they don't even say no to their kids, which I think is a little extreme. But you know, it's good to teach your kids some boundaries. But, you know, yeah, now the current parenting model is you just really love your children, love them to death. The beautiful thing that happens inwardly, you know, if I like to look at parenting and the spiritual path is, you know, that there's so much similarities there. There's so much truth there. If you love your human self and develop healthy self-esteem, if you love your egoic self and you speak to yourself in a very kind and loving way and forgive yourself, it's so much easier to then, you know, develop a healthy ego and let go into a greater spaciousness, peace, and freedom than if you do this other thing where, like in the olden days on the spiritual path, you would always attack yourself. You attacked your ego. You went to war with yourself. You thought of your human self as dirty, as wrong, as vile. Your, you know, like world of desire, you know, and of course, you know, there's all these monastic traditions that just thought that desire was wrong, you know, that any human quality of you was wrong. And when we have a spirituality that's always attacking our humanity, what happens is we develop a very strong neurotic sense of self. The ego doesn't dissolve through being attacked, through being judged, through being ignored or denied. The ego actually becomes stronger. But there's this beautiful thing that happens is if you love your human self to death, It is so much easier to let go of that human self and dissolve into your absolute divine nature. Because when the ego is healthy, when you have healthy self-esteem, there's no inner confusion and struggle. You don't have a strong critic. You don't have wars going on, you know, in your mind. You don't have multiple voices fighting with each other. When you love your ego in the most compassionate way, and you have healthy self-esteem, the mind becomes silent naturally. The heart is naturally open. It's easy to trust in God. It's easy to let go into something greater. But if you're eternally berating oneself, which is like old school spirituality, your ego becomes entrenched and develops neurosis. Actually, it forms, you know, like it splits into all these different parts. And those parts tend to fight with themselves. You know, and so this took me many years to learn on the path. That's why I'm such a big fan of psychology, just healthy, you know, learning a healthy sense of psychology and then, you know, speaking to yourself in a kind way, in a loving way. And when you have two good loving parents and those parents are loving and kind to you, you grow up and you don't have a big fat ego. You just have a strong, healthy sense of self, which is, and then it's easy to trust and open and let go. You're not going forward with fear. You're not, you know, getting into all kinds of internal drama or conflict. You don't have to do that because you're already healthy. You have your stuff worked out. And so if you didn't have perfect parents, I'm going to encourage you to learn to love yourself fully. Learn to love yourself fully. Okay, so a lot of questions here. One more thing from the comments. Brett writes that his mom died when he was 9. I usually don't ever think of her. It feels nice to connect with this tonight. I was needing this. Brett, I will just say this. I feel this incredible presence just smiling down upon you. It's actually going to bring tears to my eyes here. Open to your mother. She loves you greatly. She misses you greatly. Open to her. And she's smiling down upon you. And I'm sorry. Sometimes the people tell me that they have a family member who died, especially if I'm teaching. Sometimes, you know, I feel the presence of that individual. And so she's deeply sorry, too, for missing so much of your life. I'm going to have to unplug from her or else things will get strange. Yeah, so Brett, just open and receive. Receive. So thank you for sharing yourself, Brett. Okay, so here's a question from Anna in Australia. She writes, "Hi, Craig, can you please walk us through a meditation or discussion about opening deeply in the middle of betrayal, rejection, being cast out and being wrong in others' eyes, and remaining true and authentic without just trying to feel comfortable again?" She writes, "I guess integrity and being fully willing to to be not accepted in this moment comes to light, a full willingness to fail at being enough or being right in someone else's eye and not moving in that. Yeah, Anna, I mean, hell, all of us on the path, at one time or another, we've experienced great rejection and betrayal. There was a period on my path, actually it was not too long ago, maybe just a handful of years ago, when I felt rejection coming at me in every direction. Every direction from, you know, my kids, my community. It's actually one of the few times I had a disagreement with my own teacher, with my partner, just with friends, family. Just it seemed like it came in every direction, this intense betrayal. And it took me a long time to figure out that what betrayal is about. It's about you learning how strong you are. That you can stand, you know, what they call in Zen, on your own 2 feet. And so sometimes God has to show up in the form of people who maybe they're close to us, maybe they're not, and they radically let us down, or they just, you know, like even with my teacher, I just was really confused why, you know, I had this confusion with him. It took me a long time to realize, oh, that needed to happen. You know, I needed to, in a sense, be cast out and to go stand on my own, to develop my own autonomy, my own independence. You know, sometimes it can even feel as if God has abandoned us. And the truth is, she has not. And the truth is, the people who love you, if they do love you, even if they are betraying you in this moment, oftentimes they're just confused in their own pain, their own sadness. And like with my teacher, I knew that he loved me absolutely. But it was good, you know, it was good just to have like a little break in our relationship. In fact, it happened just in so many ways that all the places that I normally latched onto, there was nothing there. And I was alone. I was isolated. And like Christ in the desert. And I began to notice this intense anger arising within me. This feeling of just being utterly abandoned and how wrong it was. And I saw that I could have done, Anna, like what you're describing. I could have, you know, swallowed my pride and just said, you know, took the blame all on myself and said, oh, it's all my fault. You know, so that I could rejoin with the tribe, the group, whatever it was. But I realized, you know, I pleased people almost my entire life, and now was a time to stop that. And when I stopped that, yeah, there was betrayal there. You know, I was publicly humiliated on so many different levels. And so I basically just had to sit in the fire. Sit in the fire. And so if there's a meditation for that, it's sitting in the heat and you hear all the voices, you know, of the friends or the family, the people who are betraying you. You hear your voice, you know, upholding yourself, justifying yourself. And the meditation is just to let it all burn. The truth is what lasts. The truth is here in the beginning, the middle, the end. You know, all of us are sitting in vast, spacious emptiness eternally. And all of us have this indestructible power in our heart and deep in the belly. And when you're betrayed, God is inviting you to discover, one, a peace that has no end, despite the betrayal, and two, a strength and a presence that has no end. That there's something here that cannot actually be harmed by betrayal. There's something here that cannot be harmed. And this thing that I'm speaking about, it's powerful, it's strong. And so when I felt my own anger and just like let my anger unload, you know, I didn't open my mouth and say, hey, you did me wrong. Like that's, I did do that a little bit in the beginning, but then I realized that's futile. It's going to get me nowhere. I knew it wasn't the truth. You know, to go and just tell everyone that they were wrong and I was right. I just saw there was no convincing them, and that didn't get me anywhere. I sat in the fire and I let my anger burn. And then I discovered this incredible power. This power, it felt like a column of light. Column of light. And after I became deeply rooted in this column of light, this is one of the qualities of what, you know, oftentimes is called an abiding awakening. You feel deeply rooted, that there's something in you that's indestructible despite all the pain, sadness, chaos of life. You know, once I realized that, it's a funny thing. All the betrayal immediately stopped. You know, it was like it stopped coming to me. And there was a time in my life when, like I said, it seemed like every single person, the people closest to me, the people furthest from me, were all betraying me in one form or another. And I kept just walking around in circles and looking at God. Sometimes I'd even raise my fist to God saying, what the hell is this about? I know all is God, but what is this lesson about? Like, what's here? Like, what am I to learn in this moment? And I realized, oh, this is unconditional strength. And peace is eternally here. Despite the movement of my mind, despite the movement of ego, despite the movement of their mind and their ego, and now, Christ carried a cross while people whipped him and spit on him. His best friends betrayed him. And yet he knew that God was with him. He knew. There was a moment where he fell on his knees, you know, it's like, God, you left me, you know. But then he took a deep breath and he reconnected. He reconnected. And the funny thing is like now I can look back on that betrayal and it's easy to forgive the people. And I see that they weren't actually wrong. What was really happening in a non-dual sense, God was using them to betray me so that I could learn something greater. And I saw that this was a aspect of God's infinite compassion and mercy, even though at the time it's like, geez, this is the worst experience of my life, you know, the worst experience of my life. And so anyways, okay, a lot of questions here. So the next question. Here's a question from Jennifer, and she's writing about Kundalini energy. She says, Craig, will the energy that sometimes seem violent from the Kundalini energy ever go away? Yeah. And so, you know, I will say this, you know, kind of steering it back to teachings on the Divine Mother. Kundalini is a she. Kundalini is It's a movement of God birthing herself into form. You know, it's the energy of the Big Bang waking up in you as you. You know, did the Big Bang eventually slow down? Yeah, it eventually slowed down. But at first, you know, it was this huge explosion. And so sometimes on the path, we can have explosive kundalini, explosive energy. We can have all kinds of funny kriyas and movements. You know, if you ever go to a big meditation hall and stand in the back and just look out at the people meditating, you'll see some people, you know, shaking, jerking, and, you know, they start having kriyas. You know, I went through great periods of this, and it can seem violent. But if you look at it not as violent and give yourself permission just to surrender to it, the same way a mother has to surrender to the contractions in birth, it's a very similar feeling, very similar energy. You know, just letting go into this overwhelming force. And the mothers who do the best, you know, with their birth, and when they're delivering their children, are the ones who surrender to the movement, surrendering to the flow, even though it's ridiculously difficult. The mothers who resist it and call birth violence, or, you know, scream for the epidural or whatever it is, and, you know, of course, no crime in that. You know, birth is, you know, got to be the, you know, again, most difficult thing on the planet. But, you know, I've worked with so many mothers who just talk about that experience being absolutely divine, childbirth, the ones who surrendered into that flow, even though it was incredibly difficult. And then mothers who resisted it, you know, just screaming like, I'll never do that again. Like, hell no. You know, and again, rightly so. They have every right to have that thought because, it, you know, again, it's childbirth. But I encourage you to surrender. I mean, the biggest thing, Jennifer, is if you can relax your egoic nervous system. If you relax the egoic nervous system, the kriyas will probably intensify for a short period of time, and then they will integrate much more quickly. If you fight with it and get nervous about it, if your body is tense, then the kriyas will become more intense. Because basically, as your nervous system is relaxed, if you're happy, at ease, and peaceful, all your chakras will be open. You know, the central column will be relaxed and open, and they'll provide, you know, basically a big channel for the kundalini to flow. If you are tense in any way, that constricts, and then the pressure of the kundalini will cause the body to jerk, and the kriyas can go on for, you know, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, versus the more relaxed you are, they will intensify for a short period of time, and then they will quickly integrate. So that's a beautiful question. And Jennifer, that's something I normally work with individuals, like during my work week, during sessions, where I, you know, help you to learn to relax. I teach different skills. And so meditation, light, gentle yoga, you know, that type of thing can be very helpful. Anything you're doing to relax your energy body. Also, you know, most people don't know this, but, you know, our inner psychology, our wounds, our struggles, our shadows, these types of things, any emotions we repress, that creates blockages in the chakra centers. When the kundalini is flowing, you know, it basically just creates constriction. And, you know, it's the opposite of helpful. So to have a teacher or a counselor, someone you can work with to help heal and clear and transform that energy. Because like I was saying before, when you have good parents, you know, good loving mother who loves and supports you, oftentimes their inner psychology is clear and empty, and that's helpful for spiritual awakening, because then we are an empty conduit instead of a conduit full of psychological pain. Okay. Richard, just give me a minute here. I have one more question. This is from Justina in North Carolina. Hi, Craig. After a recent meditation, I started to feel a kind of grief and anger towards the divine for causing suffering in myself and others. I realized I have trouble trusting and surrendering because it's hard for me to believe that God is good when there is so much suffering. Well, I know that intellectually there must be some reason for all of this, such as we are here to grow and evolve through suffering. A more primal part of me really has trouble accepting this reality as being created for a loving reason, and feel a lot of anger and sadness that there's so much suffering and horrible things that happen on earth. Why can't we all just be born enlightened and never have to suffer? Why the struggle and evolution? So, sweetie, I'll give you like a quick response. When you die and go to heaven, there's not much growth in heaven. And heaven, it's just like being enlightened. You're free. There's no great suffering in heaven. And so all of us get to live in heaven, for eternity, if we like. But God also made an evolutionary world. And for the same reason, on a Sunday afternoon, that you might, just be relaxing and melting, into the big blue sky or the stars above or whatever it is. And at some point you might get bored and go put a movie on. And a movie, you see, it's the hero's journey. It's someone going through a life, a struggle, a challenge, and we get to have this experience of evolution. And so whether you like that explanation or not, I'll tell you, when you go to heaven, you'll be free of suffering. But here on planet Earth, it's an evolutionary world, and so each of us are divine beings, and we get to have the experience of living in an evolutionary world. Now, you are welcome to argue with God till the cows come home. I've spent good parts of my life arguing with God about this world, but then I just realized, what would happen if I didn't argue anymore? What happens if I just jump fully into this life? And then this childlike innocence woke up within me. And I'm actually quite happy to be here. Quite happy to run around and get in a little bit of trouble. To make a garden and climb mountains and fall in love and have my heart broken and then fall in love again, or do whatever it is us humans do. And so I encourage you, sweetie, just to let go of the fight and to open your heart and give yourself a chance to be loved. See if God can take your pain away. Crawl up in her lap and see if you can discover what Christ discovered, that heaven is here all about the earth, yet no man seeth. You be the one, Justina, who sees it, who realizes it. And then you'll laugh hysterically, like I did. And you'll see, it's not nearly as bad. And yet, it is terrible too. When I first started waking up to this, I used to just say, this world is terribly beautiful, terribly wonderful. There's terrible things happening, and then utter beauty, and it's this incredible paradox. And so life here on planet Earth, we have an opportunity to live this utter paradox. But the why? Well, that's an argument with God, and when you go to heaven, you can ask God, but when you get there, I bet you won't even care. You won't even care. You'll be sending love in every direction. Okay, so is Richard here? Richard, do you want to ask a question?
Hey there. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Craig.
Hi, Richard.
Just a quick question on, you know, not only just in relation to Kundalini, but just the energy body in general. When there's a major blockage in a chakra, major blockage, how do you go about working with that?
Yeah. Well, it's always through love, Richard. It's always through love. So the first thing I do if I feel anything in any of the seven chakra centers or anywhere in the body, I sit with it, I open to it, and I feel it fully. Feel it fully, experience it fully. And so I'll just start on a physical level. You know, in the last couple decades, there's this fellow, Peter Levine, who, you know, psychologist kind of guy who basically studies, you know, how mammals let go, but mostly how humans let go. And the way we're designed is if there's any pain within our mammal body, the way our particular nervous system is designed is if you feel it fully, it starts to heal. It starts to release. Sometimes it's helpful to go into the story. Sometimes there's no reason to go into the story. You know, on the most primal level, and Justine, I'll say this to you too, sweetie, because this is one of the ways we let go of this, you know, great anger at God, is to feel it fully, to acknowledge it fully, to allow the anger, the sadness, the grief, the rage, let your body shake, let it tremble, cry it out. And just as a mammal, this is what we do. Now, humans, because we're more complex than just, you know, like a dog or a cat or an antelope or whatever it is, so many of us, we try to feel like with our head or from like some like psychologically, I'll use this word, manipulative place or well-intentioned place. What I invite you, Richard, is to, you know, you can even do this now, is just to close your eyes and just tell me which center is it or where do you feel it?
It's in my aura.
Yeah. Yeah, deep in the heart. What's the feeling?
Massive contraction.
Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful. And so, you know, almost everyone on planet Earth has a massive contraction in the heart. You know, it's basically an argument with God. You know, saying, I don't want to be here. I don't feel safe to be here. I'm scared. You know, like some kind of, you know, why me? And it's a willingness to feel that contraction. And so right now I invite you just to feel like the texture of that contraction in the most innocent way. In the most innocent way. And so if you feel into it in an innocent way, what emotion comes forward, you know, with that contraction? Like, what's the emotion that's at the core of that contraction?
Fear.
Yeah. Fear's home is in the heart. So, yeah. And so if you feel into that fear, I'm going to encourage you to do something fearless. Open into that fear. And this is how we love fear. Is how we sit with fear. We open to it. So like I can feel that contraction, you know, because I'm working with you. I can feel it intuitively. And so as you start to open into that contraction, feel that fear, experience it. You know, I can tell you what I'm feeling, but why don't you tell me, what do you notice as you start to open to it? What's there? Beautiful, yeah, fullness and intensity. And see, now you're starting to discover the truth of fear. The truth of fear is its intensity. And as you open to it more, you notice like what intensity is. It's intense light. It's intense feeling. There's this intensity here. Like all energy is basically light. All energy is Satchitananda. If you open into it. And so that requires we let go of the mental story of what it is, what it's about. It's scary. It's not scary. If you just open into it the same way like you and I might go for a ride on a roller coaster and just feel the intensity. And instead of like clenching tight, you know, go for that roller coaster ride and say, wow. Wow. This is really intense. Like, wow. Wow. You know, and just start to allow that wowness of fear to unravel. To unravel. Then you may start to feel like rushes of energy, overwhelming feelings. You know, sometimes if we have a real strong psyche, there may be old memories that come forward or, you know, flashbacks or, you know, that stuff can happen. And you just sit in this wow, you know, feeling it. And again, the more we open to this, you know, we start to experience what the Buddha called the groundless ground. It's like an intensity of openness. It can feel like we are free falling through space. And it's exhilarating, to be honest. It's exhilarating. This is the energy of life itself. You know, and Justina, to include you in this is where anger dies. And true oneness with God, where you jump into life. It's you're giving yourself permission to fully incarnate. It's this absolute yes lives in this intensity. The ego will mask it with an absolute no, but once you open to that no and you give yourself permission to feel it and to jump into it and say, do I actually have to be afraid of this? Do I actually have to be frightened of this? Can I just feel and let go in this? You discover there's this eternal, like screaming yes, the aliveness, the brilliance, the fullness, you know, like Richard was describing, of life in you as you with no separation. And it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. And so, Richard, you know, I'm just looking at the time and realizing, you know, I should probably be done here. But how are you feeling, my friend?
Yeah, I'm feeling good. That was great, and I really appreciate it. Thanks, Craig.
Yeah, of course. And see, the funny thing about when we work with our energetic body is, like, your ego will tell you, like, there's an intense contraction here, or there's something really wrong, or something wrong with me, or this is something I cannot overcome. But, you know, just like Richard was displaying is, if you give yourself permission to be, you know, what a lot of people call vulnerable, what I call normal, but just open with your experience and feel it fully, you notice like right away that whatever it is you were afraid of or frightened of or fearful of, it'll start to break. It'll start to open. It'll start to unravel. And you realize, oh, my egoic definition was an illusion. It wasn't the truth. It wasn't the truth. There's this greater truth here, this greater light, this greater love and freedom. If I just sit and open with what's here, with what's here. And so, Richard, thank you so much for sharing yourself with us, you know, this evening. Thanks for being brave enough to ask a question. And see, this is what's required. Is a willingness not to listen to our mind, not to listen to the story, but just to open and feel what's here. And you'll start to see your experience will transform before your eyes. Before your eyes. Now, sometimes, you know, there's things that I've sat with for long periods before it broke so quickly. But, you know, again, the teaching is the same. You just sit and open and open and open. And so, Thank you all for hanging out here with me for a couple extra minutes. Thank you all for supporting the Sangha and this webcast through your generous donations. You can do that by visiting my website, you know, craigholiday.com. You can also find details there about the Wednesday night meditation group, which is very intimate, and look forward to seeing you all there. Also, just a heads up to everyone, I'm planning on having a retreat in Durango mid-July. I think it's the 18th, but I'm not certain. I'll verify that, but I'll post that on my website in the next week or two. So if you're interested in that, there'll be a retreat coming up soon. Just one last thing. Again, I'm just feeling this great smile from the Divine Mother. So open your hearts to her. Let her love you. Let her do your path for you. Life is hard enough to do it all alone. So may peace be with you all, and may you all have a wonderful night. And God bless you all, you mothers out there.